This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. Bring in Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer. Great article yesterday about James Harden and the Rockets heading into Game 7. A lot of interesting statistics. Still worth the read even after, because it'll give you some perspective on where James Harden is in situations.
Nothing has changed. Even though it said how he performs against Chris Paul in Oklahoma City, you're going to find it's an evergreen comment because it's still relevant headed into the Lakers.
Well, and I don't think the narrative has changed at all after last night. Let's bring Kevin in and talk about that. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great this morning, guys. I'm still weirded out after that ending last night. That was something else.
Well, both games' endings were just one for one reason, one for how sloppy and terrible the Rockets and Thunder game ended, with all the bad play, the guys falling all over the court, the inbounds pass to Adams for some reason. I mean, it just basketball.
The Heat tried to do it too. The Heat had the inbounds pass to Jimmy Butler that was like, whoa, Dragon, what are you doing? That was not good endings to either one of those games. But like you said, for different reasons.
Yeah, for different reasons. So, Kevin, the narrative doesn't change at all for James Harden after his horrible offensive performance last night, does it?
No, I mean, I don't think it's going to change nationally. You're not going to hear it be much different on any of the national shows or pods or message boards or anything. But I still can't help but think, like, watching both Game 6 and Game 7, like, at the end of Game 6, he wasn't necessarily getting buckets, but he's making hustle plays. He hustled back in transition twice. He, on the Russell Westbrook air ball, he deflected that back in bounds to gain a new possession. And even last night, I mean, despite the fact he was still 4 for 15, he still, you know, scored or assisted on 13 straight points down the stretch, besides the Covington free throw at the end for the 14th point ever since he entered the game at the 8-minute mark. And he still had, like, the two big defensive plays, a block on Schroeder on a drive, and, of course, the block on Dort for three. So with Harden, I've always been, you know, a defender of his game. It's just for him to change that narrative and that conversation. Yeah, it is going to require him to actually make a finals and maybe win a finals and perhaps change some of his own habits. But what we saw last night was a guy who battled through a low-scoring night and still made a winning contribution in the fourth quarter, which he's done throughout his career.
Yeah, but he's got to be so much more than that. If they lose that game, Kevin, if, God forbid, Chris Paul's little 12-footer goes in and the Rockets lose that game, I mean, forever it would have been just, even with the block, it would have been James Harden came up small in a big situation.
Evidence continues to mount, and you had something that I thought was really great insight, and it's basketball insight, and it's that when you compare James and Steph Curry, now they're different offenses, but that also goes to the Houston offense. But Steph Curry, when he's off the ball, is cutting, moving. He's a pain in the ass for defenses. I mean, you have to pay attention to him. When James gives it up, that's a wrap. He's going to stand 35 feet from the basket. And your numbers of the assist to James Harden from Chris Paul and from Russell Westbrook, that was one of the most staggering stats I've ever seen. I didn't think it could even be possible. Can you go through that?
Yeah. So that stat is this season, during the regular season, Westbrook assisted Harden on only 35 baskets. And the last 2 years, that was 29 and 39 times for Chris Paul to James Harden, which is really a reflection of how little Harden moves after he gives the ball up. You're not seeing him coming off screens or handoffs or cutting to the basket so much. It's a lot of what he was criticized for at the end of Game 6, in which, you know, he screened for Westbrook and didn't really move much after. He just kind of stood around near the NBA logo close to half court waiting for a pass out to him. And, of course, sometimes that works. You know, the offense breaks down and you kick it out to him and he gets in isolation. But that's probably, you know, what D'Antoni is thinking with the mindset there. But I do think with Harden, there's some perhaps that he can change himself, and there's some that Mike D'Antoni should probably have to evolve, or perhaps having a change at head coach to have more. The big thing is like, people talk a lot about defensive versatility in the league. You want to be switchable, you know. But what's also important is variety on offense. You want to have different looks that you throw at teams. And D'Antoni's done a better job at installing some of the stuff that we see this year with some off-ball cutting from some guys like Gordon and Covington. And he's has Harden as an on-ball screener. We saw that for Jeff Green before Westbrook was back. And we've seen it a little bit throughout the season, too. But I do think there's still more that could be done where, you know, it's not so predictable and get so stagnant off ball, because the best offenses usually in playoff situations are when guys, like, you don't know what's coming as the defense. And sometimes it feels like with Houston, you know what to expect, even if it's so potent, historically potent during the regular season. I do wish we saw a bit more variety from Houston during the postseason. That's where it's going to really pop up against the Lakers with their truly elite defense.
And you know, speaking of variety, it does feel like, and you reference this, when a guy throws nothing but 99-mile-an-hour fastballs, as soon as he throws any type of off-speed pitch, it is a nightmare, because if you know him to be just one type of pitcher, you can't handle that change. You're already so dialed in, and the Rockets are so dialed in that I think Chris Paul's mid-range game when he came over really was a lifesaver for the Rockets when things got a little dicey, from three. We know that P.J. Tucker, it's ironically P.J. Tucker hit a shot that he probably hasn't even taken in about 6 years yesterday to secure a win, but certainly put them in position to win. And it's just, I think Daryl Morey is almost like a guy in Las Vegas playing cards who says, look, this is what the book says to do in blackjack, and I'm not going to deviate. This is the book. Stay with the book. And I get the feeling it's always going to be that way.
Yeah, and that's really one of the difficult things here. Because Houston's system undeniably works. They had the first, second, and first-ranked offense last 3 years. This year they were sixth, because other teams are, you know, shooting more threes or seeing other higher efficiency offenses across the league. So Houston set the coordinates for what teams are doing now and what they're going to be doing in the future in terms of shot selection. But, you know, something that keeps coming up when I talk with people around the league is, why don't they break from that late in games a little bit more? And you mentioned that Tucker shot, that little pull-up floater he took from about 8-9 feet out, and that was a pivotal shot in the game. And with Houston, it's always shocking to people with somebody like James Harden. He is one of the greatest scorers we will ever see in our entire lifetime. I mean, I love watching Harden get buckets. His ability to get to the rim, his ability to pull up from three, step back from three, but he's shooting under 25% in the fourth quarter and overtime of playoff games from three over the past 5 years. And part of that is because of the load that's on him. And you would think maybe instead of sometimes, you know, being forced into those tough step back shots, it could help him. It could help him to maybe take some open pull-up twos, because I would be utterly shocked to see him take like an 18-footer at the elbow. I think everybody would be shocked, because it doesn't happen. And the defense also would be shocked. And adding, again, more variety to your shot selection could make you a tougher player to defend. And against the Lakers, that's going to be incredibly important, because I fully expect LA to stay big with lineups with AD and McGee or AD and Howard. And they're going to try to abuse the Rockets on the offensive boards, clean up second chances. And they're also going to try to maintain size on the rim to stop Harden from getting to the basket. So they want their bigs in help position. So Harden is going to be forced into outside jumpers. Is he going to take any twos to change it up? Or is it going to be all really, really hard step-back threes? That to me, is going to be one of the big questions in the series.
So we're talking with Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer. He did a nice article on the Rockets and going into Game 7. And one of the – you alluded to this as well in the article, that the Rockets really aren't a good shooting team. For a team, you know, they're a volume shooting team, but they're not really all that good at it. I said this morning, watching Miami – I would love to see them in Rockets jerseys with Mike D'Antoni coaching them, because I think they're the kind, you know, with the Duncan Robinsons and the Tyler Heroes and the Jimmy Butlers. Boy, you want to talk about assist? How about good shooters actually shooting threes? What would that look like?
Yeah, I mean, having a Hero or a Robinson or one of those guys sure would be nice. But that speaks to the challenge of team building. I mean, Daryl Morey has put together, you know, a team that almost beat the Warriors twice. I mean, would have won the finals, you know, in that, you know, unfortunate Game 7 loss against Cleveland had they advanced. So it's not like they haven't been in a position to accomplish something incredible. But, you know, also, it's just the facts. Like, this team doesn't have really elite shooters. McLemore is the only guy who shot above 36%, above 37% from three. They were 24th as a whole on the entire season. You know, you mentioned Chris Paul earlier and his importance from mid-range, but also, like, he's a very good three-point shooter, too. Russell Westbrook is not. Shot only 26% from three this year. He's one of the least efficient offensive scorers, really, in recent league history on pull-up jumpers from two or three. So, like, you replace that with Westbrook, that's going to hurt your offensive efficiency. And teams just don't respect Westbrook when he's off ball. They don't care to defend him. They're going to help off of him and hurt Harden's driving lanes. So, like, with Westbrook, I maybe there's other ways to get him going, putting him near the rim and at the dunker's spot or something like that, to help mitigate the fact that he's not offering all the spacing for you. So I do look forward to seeing if D'Antoni comes out with anything else against the Lakers, because I think they're going to have to. I mean, I felt better about Houston's chances of beating the Lakers in a potential series before the playoffs began than I do right now. But there's more that D'Antoni could do, and I'll be interested to see if he has some cards that he's been holding tight.
You know, it's going to be what's curious to me is we talked about this. To win a championship, you have to have the others make plays, and I know Kenny Smith and Charles and those guys have talked about that, and that's, you know, as Rockets fans, we saw that with Dream, where guys stepped up around him with the Rockets in two championships in the 90s. But that's true with the Rockets, too. And we saw them get through. Frankly, they got out of that series despite James's playing Game 7 because Covington stepped up, Jeff Green stepped up. You had people step up who you're not used to. I mean, Covington shot 50% in that series, 24 of 48 from three. Obviously, you have to play above your expected potential to win. You have to get guys who do that to win championships many times, and in fact, most times. Well, if James can play like he usually plays, and with Lou Dort not checking him, I think there's a chance that could happen against the Lakers. The question, I guess, Kevin, is going to be, can they get the others to rise up and make those plays? And do the Lakers have to have the others do that as well when they have Davis and LeBron, because that feels like a more consistent combo than Crazy Russ and James?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, with Houston, like I alluded to this earlier, Houston, it's going to be important for them in this series to make it an advantage that they are small here, because the Lakers want to play big. They want to play with AD and McGee or AD and Howard on the floor with occasional minutes of just AD at the five. And that could be problematic for Houston, considering what those guys can do on the offensive boards. You know, you have to stop LeBron rim attacks, and then you also have to stop Anthony Davis and McGee cleaning up on the boards. And on the defensive end, those guys, having both of them on the floor, assures that at least one of them will be in a help position to help stop a James Harden or Russell Westbrook drive. So for Houston, it's going to be critically important that they have, you know, a hot outside shooting series, because that's when the Lakers would be more likely to pull one of those bigs and go smaller and have a J.R. Smith on the floor or a Quinn Cook even, or a Jared Dudley, because that's when Houston can do what they do and get switches that are heavily in their advantage on their side. So I think for the Rockets, that's going to be really one of the keys here, because if you shoot well, it means the Lakers can't do what they want to do in the series by going big. They would have to thus go small like Houston is.
Yep, that's Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer. Great article yesterday. We really enjoyed it. Great stats in there and insight. We appreciate it. Kevin, thanks for joining us, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
I'm looking forward to this next series, guys. It's going to be fun. Thanks
for having
me.
Fun.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right. It's 915 ESPN 975 713-780-3776. Come hang with us.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
I'm in love with the coco. I'm in love with the coco.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on Schubert George. Says Harden entered the game at the 8-minute mark, down 94-91. Scored and assisted on final 13 Houston points and closed out the Thunder. Floater, assist, assist, layup, assist, block, win. He played a role. He just didn't. Listen, he is the Rockets. He is not only the face, but, man, you got to depend on that guy for. They won without him playing well, and they still won. But in the final minutes, no, he did a bunch of stuff. Now, did he play well? No.
I mean, we could take a snapshot, and because a lot of the criticism is about his fourth quarter performances, and you can look at what he did, the couple block shots, the assists, he just went through it, and say, okay, that for that particular stretch, James played winning basketball.
Which he hadn't in the past.
Yeah, so no. When you take snapshots, you can say, that was a micro version.
How about the macro?
The macro would say he was... The other players kept them afloat until that spot. So I don't think you're ever going to get a perfect game from any player, and particularly James. I mean, but it would have been comforting, I think, because someone tweeted out, I forgot, some NBA blue checkmark guy. I don't know his name. Maybe Tony Jones. Forgot. Tony Jones, NBA. He said, I'm predicting a 48-8 game from James. I think he said it yesterday or right. And I was like, you're new here, aren't you? You're new. I mean, what we got last night, I don't even want to just take shots at James, because what we got last night in a series-defining moment, I guess I'm going to have to take compared to what all the other moments.
At the very least, he did that. You know what? He was going to be a GOAT, he was going to be the GOAT if they lose that game. But he came up with game-winning plays at the end, which James hadn't done in elimination games before. So you take what you can get.
I think with the narrative we discussed with Kevin O'Connor, and we've done it before, we would just like, if you're a James guy or a Rocket guy, to not have to find moments. Like, the whole game should be, man, he imposed his will throughout.
This is a Harden game.
And it was no doubt that he was the best player on the floor.
You shouldn't have to ask that in year of a 30-year-old whatever megastar and annual MVP candidate. Never in history have we ever seen that in basketball, where an annual perennial MVP candidate has such a long history of timid, debilitating performances in clutch situations, in the fourth quarter, in close games, and in like game sevens and closeout games. And this is, unfortunately, you know, this just played right into it. I mean, it was nothing new, and it is crazy to see him not have that one game. Like, I was kind of, except for the fact that Dort is a bad matchup for him, but I think it's in James's head now, because James wasn't taking it to Schroeder on switch offs. When Schroeder has struggled to guard James early in the series, he physically manhandled, just bullied his way past Schroeder, and then he didn't do it yesterday. And that's a guy who's just lost confidence. And when you go do what I did, which is go through and you go through all the box scores and you go look at his performances in a postseason and you start breaking it down by elimination games, game seven, fourth quarters, whatever you want to do, it really becomes clear. Like, there is no doubt. You don't get fooled by the total points and rebounds and assists. You realize, wow, his assist to turnover is like almost identical in those kinds of games. Wow, his shooting percentage, he's 40% from two, and he's 33% from three. Wow, it's even worse if you break it down into the last 5 years. It gets really, really bad the last 5 years. And so what I think is happening is I think there's a building. I think it's building inside of James, inside of his mind. I think this has been, if you look at his first couple of years, it wasn't necessarily like that. He just didn't have enough help. Well, at least in the first year. The second year he had Dwight. I mean, he had more help. But man, over the last 5 years, it's almost like this has become a self-fulfilling prophecy for James, where I think he's going into situations just mentally unsure of himself, and it shows up with timidity on the court. And the best way to get out of that to me would be to post him up and let James Harden do what he does best, which is be physical around the basket and let him try to get to the free throw line to get some easy points. Standing 33 feet away, 34 feet away, I don't want to see the step back threes, because if they don't start going, I think it wrecks his mindset. It's all about getting to the cup early and developing confidence. And I would love to see one of those cards. Kevin is hoping that Mike D'Antoni, you know, he's interested to see if he has cards up his sleeve. He doesn't. He doesn't have cards
no.
up his sleeve.
He's going to, you know what? James and Russ will tell him what he's going to do, just like he did in the end of game six. Okay, you guys want to do that? That's fine. He doesn't. He really doesn't.
But putting James in the post would be a card up the sleeve, only it's not a great matchup with this team.
This James running around thing, you know, without the ball, movement without the ball, I just, you know, as James as the number one guy, I just don't see it happening.
Cut through.
He's not going to do
that. He's just asking to make a cut, pass and cut.
He's not going to do that.
Why? What is the big deal about cutting through? That's nothing.
Because he just wants to stand there and get the ball back.
But he did that at Arizona State.
Listen, he loves that dribble between his legs thing.
John's doing a dribble.
That is so sweet. It looks so sweet.
But when you don't have the ball.
And then there's 3 seconds left on the clock, and he passes it to someone.
You know, James gets compared in Rocket Twitter. We'll talk about. Particular, they don't question who's better when it's Kobe and Michael Jordan, but they do like to get into who's better, James or Dwayne Wade. And I don't want to get into that battle.
Oh, is that something that goes on?
It's a thing. I don't want to.
Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, it's a thing though. I'm just telling you.
Who said this?
A lot of people. They all just
James or Dwayne Wade.
Yes, it's a thing. But I don't want to argue about it because I'm a Heat fan. I have my opinion. Certainly. But really the point is how often you talk about movement, how often Dwayne Wade moved off the ball and got a layup just because he cut hard. How much easier and efficient would James be if just on occasion, like you throw the ball into a non-scorer in the post and set a couple back cuts, James cuts, and he gets a layup. Get a couple of those a game, and how much easier his life would be if he added some diversity into his game, some movement off the ball. But that's not going to happen.
No, that's not going to happen. No, he expends all of his effort on defense. So
I feel like you're being disingenuous.
He's not going to be able to, you know, running without the ball, that's not happening.
It would make their game
different.
Oh,
I guess
different.
You don't want him to be the defensive player of the year, Dell.
Well, he's
okay.
Never been that, so... I don't think it's close.
All right.
I'm just saying, it's not even about changing the way he plays completely, but just a couple buckets. Cut to the rim hard, get a back screen, and get a couple layups.
Yeah, there's nothing. You're not asking James to do anything crazy. No. Cutting to the basket keeps him. You know what? When you mentally stay engaged in a game, for James, it's all about getting easy baskets. A back cut can get him an easy basket, especially if people are used to seeing you just sit there. And James has an explosive first step. That's the key to being a good back cutter. I mean, you know, is lulling people to sleep and then explosive quick first step. It really should not turn into 4-on-4 where you have a one player back out and say, okay, Russ, go to work. I mean, I'm all for spacing, but James Harden is the premier. If you tell me that James is the greatest scorer in the history of the game, then that really doesn't. If we deal with these kinds of games in the playoffs, somewhere in Daryl Morey's and Tad Brown and Tillman Fertitta, at some point during the game, they had to be just as frustrated as us, right? Like, they had to be saying that. You can't be Daryl Morey and just say, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, beep, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, 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 beep. James is the greatest. James is actually way better than Michael Jordan as a scorer. He's actually easily the greatest. How can you say that out loud now after you see these postseason performances?
No.
And if you're all about efficiency, it's inefficient. And he's not getting to the free throw line anymore. Once again, at least against Lou Dort, he didn't get to the free throw line.
No, we'll see in this series. 928 ESPN. We got some news, man. We haven't even talked about Leonard Fournette. We haven't talked about Steve Nash. we haven't talked about.
There was
about.
A big college football opt-out yesterday.
Yeah, huge. We'll talk about it on the other side, 928 ESPN 97. But we've been talking hoops, and hoops, sporting goals, and equipment is what I want to talk about now. And your kids, they want to play basketball. They're watching the NBA playoffs. They want to get involved, Dad. I want to go out in the driveway, Dad, and I want to play. Well, okay, but, well, we got this crappy – man, I can't – Dad, I'm 3 foot four. How am I supposed to throw in – a basket for a 10-foot goal? Well, you can't. So what you got to do is you got to get a goal that the kids will actually enjoy, that the kids will actually use. He said, well, that's going to be more expensive than that white one that needs painting with the rim that's bent that I staple to the garage. Yeah, it's probably going to be a little bit more expensive than that. But here's the deal. Buy the best quality goal, the tempered glass backboard, the unbreakable rim, the unrustable stanchion, the installation that's second to none, the stenciling, all of the lights, and all of the other accessories that you can buy along with it, and have your kids playing, actually using it, lowering the goal so that they can hang on it, and they can hang on it all day long, Dad, and it won't break. Your kids actually will have something that they can't break. That's new. So if you're looking for that best goal in the world, it's ProDunkHoops.com. ProDunkHoops.com. Tell Keith Tate. You heard it right here.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit InnovationMap.com today.
Do it now. Do it. Do it. Do it now.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. John and Lance here with you at 713-780-3776. So Steve Nash is the new head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. He's going to have, I guess he and KD are close. They've worked together, and he would say, like, I guess Steve Nash is his trainer of some sort or something. That's the word on Twitter. Whatever the case may be, is this a – so we can fully expect him to run D'Antoni's offense? This is going to be a D'Antoni kind of thing?
I don't know.
Well, Steve Nash flourished in it.
Yeah. I don't know. Now, you got to remember now, there was also more – it wasn't just drive and dish for three where everybody – Mike D'Antoni's offense wasn't just what you see with the Rockets now, where people act like if you cross, it's like hot lava between the three-point line and the paint. You are just not allowed to be in there at all. And that wasn't the case with, I mean, Amari Stoudemire, you know, didn't just, it wasn't just, he did catch a lot of lobs.
Well, this is all, this small ball is all new. Q
Richardson shot threes. I mean, look. They shot threes on a drive and dish.
And you can have a big man. That's what
I
said. But
Steve Nash is a mid-range shooter. Yeah, also, he can shoot mid-range.
This is all new. This is all different. Yeah. This is an iteration of D'Antoni.
Mike D'Antoni's offense is good.
Yeah.
Well, Mike D'Antoni's offense
has been good in the regular season. He's never won anything with it.
I don't care. My whole, you don't get to the regular season unless you win games. His offense has created three MVPs. Two MVPs, but three MVPs in seasons.
So Doug Moe did this too and didn't win. I mean, the theory is, the question is,
speed.
Can you do this? Can you play this way and not play defense and win a championship? And so far the answer is no.
But the Rockets have played defense this year. No. That's not fair. The Rockets played defense 2 years ago. The Rockets played defense this year. The Rockets have played defense at different times.
Yeah, okay. That is fair. And they haven't won anything. And they still haven't won anything.
Right. But I would say, do you think they've underperformed against the Warriors? Like, do you think they're the better team than the Warriors?
Well,
which team do you think they should have beaten? Were they better than?
Which Warriors team?
Yeah.
Well, the one without KD.
That's the only one I can think of.
Well, okay, they should have won.
No other time.
And guess what they did? They lost in six.
Yeah, but that's why I have a hard time. This whole way hasn't won a championship. They haven't been the favorites to win a championship other than one. And even when the KD out, you know, Chris Paul had been injured. Like, Chris wasn't very good that year. He never got back to who he was. The year before that was the year that
I remember
they,
correctly, Chris was actually pretty good in that series, though.
I think he was average. No. Pretty
well, whatever.
Average. I don't think
whatever
he was
the
great.
Case may be, they just haven't been good enough. Then that's not even arguable. But But we'll see whether or not with KD, with Kyrie, maybe with some height, maybe this is what Steve Nash is going to put together there. Well, listen, do they have championship DNA? Yeah, they got two guys that
Mike
have won.
Mike D'Antoni's got the second most wins like in NBA history or something
That's
like that.
That's great.
Mike D'Antoni can win. Mike D'Antoni has a very good offense. I don't think, to me, I can't just say because he's never won at all that isn't a sign of... They're not mutually exclusive. If you don't have some commitment to defense, my problem with it is you've got to have some level of commitment to defense. So if you're going to stack your team with offensive players, and Dell actually brought up a really good point yesterday. When we're talking about getting all these shooters, where's all the shooters? Daryl, where's the shooters? It's a real thing. Like, you're running this offense, but if you stack your roster to play an offense, well, how many of those guys are combo players where they also defend? Like, you have to make – defense has to be a priority at some point, too.
Just because you're an outside shooter doesn't mean you can't play defense.
No, it's not that.
I mean, they're not. That's not mutually exclusive either.
Name the good ones. Name the great ones. The great all-time shooters.
That's why 3D guys are such a big deal.
Was Ray Allen a great defender?
A great defender. You got two of the worst defenders in James and Russ.
That's why you can't – that's his point. Yeah,
well, then don't get Russ. Well, don't bring Russ in. Russ is actually, if you want to know the truth, because of Russ, you can't have a guy over 6'4".
I know.
Because of Russ, he can't shoot outside.
Right.
Okay? All of those things. Then don't bring Russ in. He doesn't fit.
Then what do? You keep Chris Paul?
Well, no, you trade Chris Paul for somebody else. And oh, by the way, you gave up two first.
Yeah.
And you flipped on two other draft picks.
What are you kidding me? You couldn't give away. You couldn't just trade him for somebody else.
You had to get a giant contract, and you had to give away all those picks to get rid of him because everyone, despite
James needs help because he's not, he can't step up and win those series for you. He has to have a big number two.
When you give away two firsts and you flip two firsts as well, I'm sure there might have been other takers out there.
Chris Paul was the good. Oh, I don't know about that.
Would you have
who wanted it? Who wanted that?
Well,
that
who
contract?
Knows? We don't know. You have no idea.
Rockets,
and I have no idea.
Rockets first are going to be valuable.
But they gave up two firsts and flipped two firsts, and they gave up Chris Paul. That's an attractive package.
Yeah, but you take on Chris Paul's contract. Which
and
had
by the way, Chris Paul almost
duration.
Beat you. And had he done that,
how valuable are 20 first pick, first round picks in the 20s
from the Rockets?
From the Rockets, yeah. Like 26.
Who never tank? Yeah,
I 22. Don't know.
Not there's not.
When did Siakam get picked?
But there's not great value. You can't just pick to. You can't just.
Well, there are
pick
though.
And choose.
Yeah, but people do covet draft picks.
The value of Chris Paul isn't this offseason, the one that's coming up, is going to be far greater than it was.
Yeah.
The previous offseason.
He's coming off another injury prone season.
He was done, and that's why the Rockets had to give up so much, and they had to find a taker who was willing to give up a giant contract, a long giant contract.
James has
return.
To like you too.
And,
quit
and,
acting like
and
that's
by the
not
way,
the case.
When Paul George decided he was done, Oklahoma City was like, why do we want Russ here anymore? So let's try to get rid of him too.
And if you want to know the truth, they were better with Chris Paul than they were with Russ and Paul George.
Yeah, it
so
turned
the
out
Rockets.
That way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Rockets were better with Chris. The problem is James can't get along
the
with
Rockets
them.
Got
the
to.
Rockets had 65 wins and were the number one team in basketball and got and would have won that title if CP soft tissue injury can't if he could have stayed on the court, the Rockets win the NBA title because that LeBron team was
you
not
can't
that
assume
good.
That, but okay. Okay.
They're the favorites. They're the
they
favorites
the
going
favorites.
Into
they're the favorites, but the favorites
but
don't always win.
Yeah,
you can't assume it.
Not against the LeBron team.
No.
Particularly when it's James on the other side.
And you can't assume that they would automatically just won those two games anyway.
That too.
Well, they had leads in both those
so
games.
What? They had leads. They have leads all the time.
But we can't throw away 60, the most wins in Rocket history and act like that season didn't happen.
I won't throw it away.
It didn't happen, Lance.
But that was
he didn't win at all. He's never won at all. That's all. Mike D'Antoni has never won at all, period.
This isn't about Mike D'Antoni. What we're saying.
Yes, it was about Mike D'Antoni until you changed it.
No, this is not. This is about James. You can't just, if you say you're not good enough, James is your
this
superstar.
This was about Mike D'Antoni and Steve Nash, Lance, and you just changed it.
I know, but we've been going, there's a lot of things that we've gone to, and one of them is the fact that your best player was Chris Paul, and you say you can't get, you have to get Russell Westbrook. You have to. I didn't like the move either. I don't like it to this day, but James can't do it without a Robin. He has no prayer. He has no prayer unless you have a really good player next to him.
Well, that's the other argument. Is James Batman or is he Robin?
James is James should be. They should consider trading. I'm telling you, they should consider trading James. If they don't, they're stuck in this for the next however many years.
I've been saying that forever. We're in hardened purgatory.
Yeah, but you don't want to trade him.
No. I know Daryl Morey won't trade him.
Well, then you're stuck in. You're a willing participant in purgatory. I'm not. If it takes doing something, you got to consider it. If you're Daryl, depending on what happens against the Lakers, obviously.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, this is a better matchup. This is actually a better matchup for the Rockets. If you want, they have looked better against the Lakers than anybody. We'll see. They might give the Lakers hell. They might give the Lakers hell because they did give the Warriors the best. Nobody played the Warriors like the Rockets did.
No,
the
regular
that whole
season.
Run, except when the Cleveland beat them, obviously.
We did just have a game, though, where Lou Dort severely outplayed a future Hall of Famer.
That is
Lou Dort started his career in the G League. Lou Dort was the inventor of the Dort.
Well, you were. And I would say, Dort. And I would think I would blame you Dort. For. As soon as you threw that slander on him after Game 5.
I almost texted you about the Heat had this locked up.
Yeah,
almost threw a little
stay away from my teams. As soon as you threw that slander at him after Game 5, all of a sudden Lou Dort became a player. You started the Dort. Let's just call it
Dort.
And you know
Eric
what?
Gordon
with Eric
Gordon.
Dorton, and then he started hitting threes.
Who knew that those two were going to be the offensive stars? You mentioned it before the break, but we got to talk about it. Jamie Newman has opted out.
Yep,
the Georgia quarterback. He says he is not playing. So what else they got there, Doug?
JT Daniels. He also transferred
in. Oh, that's
right,
from USC.
He hasn't been cleared for contact, but he has participated in their scrimmage, but he's a quarterback, so he wouldn't get touched, so he played. Now they have until September 26th. That's when SEC's first game. So he probably is going to get cleared for contact. He's coming off an ACL injury. So Kirby Smart brought in Jamie Newman from Wake Forest, and everyone assumed he would be the guy. And then months later, he brought in JT Daniels. So he does have a big time transfer in waiting, and we all expect him to play. But and Jamie Newman, for as good as he was sometimes at Wake Forest, he put on those Georgia colors, and everyone was like, "Look! All of a sudden, look, second round pick, they've got a star." He was okay at Wake Forest.
Yeah, the Newman stuff has been blown out of proportion a little bit, and just watching some tape, I'm like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, and Wake Forest
it's plays, nice. I mean, you know,
and Wake Forest fine. Plays that weird style where they put the ball in the running back's gut and hold it there for like 7 seconds. It feels like
it is the weirdest
before
play
they make a decision where to give, run, or throw.
No, so a zone read. Imagine this if you're what Dell's talking about. Okay, zone read. Now imagine the quarterback and the running back both walk. This is not an exaggeration. They walk towards the offensive line. They take steps where they're walking. And the running back is walking. He's not running. If it's a jog, it's the slowest jog you've ever seen. And you would think it's a nightmare for offensive line to hold the blocks, but they stalled linebackers from making decisions.
Isn't that the Le'Veon Bell way?
Except he has the ball in his hands.
Right.
Yes. They haven't made a decision.
This is all a mesh point. It's an extended mesh point of about 1.5 seconds. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
And they're just trying to force a linebacker to make a decision.
Make a decision.
And then they'll make a decision.
I could see it. I ran the triple option. And the longer that you can hold on to the ball and ride that back through the harder it is for the defense to decide.
Yeah, it's unique
to
Wake Forest.
You have to commit.
As much as we see the zone read in all college football and now in the NFL, Wake Forest does it to a point where it's got to be hell on a linebacker decision maker.
Yes.
And they've been pretty good. And Jamie Newman was okay there, but he's gone now. And JT Daniels looks like he has an open path, former USC quarterback, to be the starter there.
Yep. All right, 943 ESPN 975 7378 0377 6. If you want to get in here, we'll take your calls. You want to talk Rockets? You're more than welcome. We still haven't even touched on Leonard Fournette yet. We'll do that on the other side.
You're listening to ESPN 975. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Hey, welcome back on ESPN 97.5. Dell. Ryan Fitzpatrick, distraught. His mother passed.
Yeah.
And he's left practice. They don't know when he's coming back.
Yeah.
What about, are you ready for Tua-ton?
Now, yeah, I don't know when he'll be back. The next game is clearly, about 9 days away now, or a little bit longer. 10 days next Sunday. I don't know. Because the back and forth in training camp has been that they're giving Tua every opportunity to win the backup job, and it's going okay.
Josh Rosen.
He hasn't been great, but he's been okay.
What about Josh Rosen being your starter? How awesome.
Whatever. I saw it last year. I'm not that concerned. This team isn't expected to
win. Tanking for Trevor.
That's not happening. If Tua starts, it'd be great. Just to see him play. He has, apparently in practice, he doesn't look like he's being hampered by the hip. I mean, he got cleared quite a bit ago for contact, and now he hasn't been hit in practice, but everyone who says he looks like nothing is different as far as him moving around. In fact, there's a video out there of him dancing. Not that it means anything as far as football is concerned, but he appears to be fine. A hit, I guess, will determine if he is. I would be okay with it. I would like, obviously, the Ryan Fitzpatrick thing is weird because if his mom has died and it's a guy in a mental state that maybe is not ready to play. But if it comes down to Tua starting against New England on opening day, let's get it started real soon. Let him and Joe Burrow both play on that Sunday. Let's see where they are. The only one who is in no contention of playing is Justin Herbert. Like, I think Anthony Lynn said, Tyrod Taylor's our starter until someone steps up. That's not the greatest.
No.
Haskins got named starter yesterday,
yeah,
too.
That happened, yeah. For how long?
I think for a while. I mean, that's their quarterback. He was a first-round pick. Why would he not be?
Yeah, and Alex,
you got to give him a chance, man. You got to give guys a chance to learn. Yeah.
And he was second year, not rookie.
He was a one-year starter in college. Uh-huh. This is his third year as a starter outside of high school.
Yeah,
and
you got to start him.
Yeah, just clean up a little bit. Apparently, Fitzpatrick returned to practice. He did leave and miss a scrimmage because his mother passed away, but he did return. So I think it's all lined up for him to play. And we've gone through this. I think their schedule probably sets up for them to go at best 3-2, 2-3. And if that's their record through the first five games, he'll keep playing.
Yep. So the Bucs pick up Leonard Fournette. That's a good pickup for them. It'll be interesting what happens there. Who else do they got?
Ronald Jones.
Ronald Jones.
Ronald Jones is their guy they were going to lean on. And so now Fournette becomes like, Fournette's very valuable. Do you know, okay, don't look at any stats. Don't look at any stats, right?
What about LeSean McCoy there too?
Is Shady, did something happen with Shady?
No, I think he's just there.
No, he's there.
Beside being accused of getting a woman beat up.
Would you keep Leonard Fournette and Shady?
No, but like I had a buddy of mine who's an agent said, Leonard Fournette must be hated around NFL circles. Like, he must carry a really bad reputation because you could have had Leonard Fournette for like $4 million. You could have got your hands on him. If you had claimed him, he got all the way through the waiver wire process.
So I wonder have they reported what he's getting paid?
I haven't seen that.
And I like that. I like that Jadeveon's waiting for his $20 million deal. Yeah. Is there a chance Jadeveon Clowney just doesn't play pro football this year? You want to talk about that? Will go ahead and solidify everyone knowing, yeah, he doesn't like football. Because if you weren't willing to take the offer that was on the table from a couple different teams, including what I've heard from an agent was a $19 million a year deal from Seattle because he wanted 20. What?
Fournette signed a 1 year, $2 million deal.
So
1 year, $2 million. So he got half of what he was supposed to
see.
Make.
And I got Bill O'Brien mad at me because I said, why pick up a guy with that much when you can find, I said, you're good at finding running backs. Carlos Hyde. Exactly. That's my point. Why take on? I brought up, this is what really got him pissed off. Like, why are you taking on David Johnson's contract? You don't have to take it on. Do the trade, get your second rounder for Nuke, and then don't take that on because you can find running backs. Here we are, and it proves once again you could have had Leonard Fournette for $2 to $3 million. I'm saying three because you could have outpaid.
Or you just pick them up off of waivers.
Or pick them up off the waivers for four.
Whatever.
For $4 million. And you would have had your running back position, your one and your two, for about $8.5 million, $9 million. This is the example of not understanding the process as a personnel guy. You always can find running backs. You can ask Kyle Shanahan. Ask anybody, ask Minnesota. You can always find running backs.
Yes, it is your job.
It's not my job to do that.
Yes, yes, it is.
You could have found Leonard Fournette could have fallen right in your lap. Now, maybe he doesn't have the football character he wants, so that's, you know. Yeah, but Leonard Fournette is a viable player if Carlos Hyde is a viable player.
What's that, Bill?
I know you don't like when I bring that stuff up. I get it. I get it. John, I'm going to ask you a question. You watched plenty of Leonard Fournette in college, right?
Oh, yeah.
Dale, you're not allowed to play this game because I think you'll know the answer on this.
Okay.
How many... I'm going to ask you a question about Leonard Fournette. Based on what you know about him, you probably watch more LSU than Jacksonville Jaguar football, other than when they play the Texans.
Yeah. You're going to ask me how many catches he has on the backfield.
Yes.
I knew that. And the answer is not many.
Okay. I thought you knew the answer.
Is it zero?
The answer is actually, are you ready for this? 76 last year.
What?
Check down. Yeah.
Check down Gardner.
Check down
76 catches last year.
He didn't catch any.
He was
out of
targeted 100 times last year.
What's his average?
He didn't catch any. His average what? 6.9.
Well, I got to look up his LSU stats. I don't remember him catching four balls.
Hold on, you ready for this? He had 36 catches, 22 and 76.
Wow.
When I heard that number 76 last year, I was like, what? In PPR leagues, don't forget, this is a guy who had 1,100 yards rushing and 76 catches. Now, he also scored a grand total of 3 touchdowns.
And he had 41 total catches in 3 years at LSU.
76. I would have thought the same thing you did. I knew he was getting catches last year. 76 catches last year.
Holy crap.
That just goes to show you that
that's
guys...
That's good from PPR. Holy crap.
Yeah.
What did he, how much did he run for? 1,100?
1,100, but he had 3 touchdowns total.
Yeah. But even still, you get PPR.
That's a lot of points.
That's a lot of points.
That's a lot of fantasy value.
Gardner Minshew, throw the ball downfield.
No. Check down?
To who? You got DJ Chark or nobody.
Yeah, that's true.
But even still.
Dude, who are you going to throw to?
76 times Leonard Fournette. That's an... Mm.
The thought is, and now are you guys buying it?
What?
Jags tanking for Trevor and Dabo.
Yeah.
Well,
I could see it.
I know.
I don't.
I'm going to
Dabo, NFL coach.
It's Nick Saban all over again. If you're Dabo, you have it really good.
Yeah, why?
No, except I know an NFL coach. There was a college coach that
it's
says,
much easier.
Cause get to the NFL. It's so much easier.
Well, it's easier
if you don't like recruiting.
If you don't like recruiting, but here's where it's harder. You can't recruit. No. So when he's bringing in all these 5 stars,
that's
guess what
true.
Happens
he's
in the pros? Like
everybody in players.
Oh crap! That's Dabo right. wins that yes, battle. Yes. He ain't winning it in pros because guess what it is? Let's see. You'll be in London soon enough.
But,
don't worry, Dabo.
Well, Jacksonville is a bad market, but if you're known as a player's coach, some guys might make the decision to go there as a free agent.
Well, I would say this. That whole Dabo use of the N-word thing might come up again.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't. I think the players know better.
I'm telling you.
He didn't use it as a slur.
I'm not saying.
He didn't use it
that's
as a slur.
Just used as leverage against him.
I am not crushing him for it. But it goes away when you're the Clemson head coach. It'll be something that is talked about if he becomes an NFL head coach.
Yeah, I mean, it might be.
It will
do you think it will?
John,
it.
You can,
will it linger?
You can poo-poo it, but the fact that he said it will become a thing.
Oh, no, they'll rewrite that
but
article.
It's not going to stop guys from playing for him.
It's not about, I'm talking about I don't know what will stop guys from playing for him, but people, aren't you that guy? I'm just saying it will come up. But I don't think Dabo would do it. You want to be the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach because Trevor Lawrence is gone? Why?
There's only 32 NFL jobs.
Who says he wants to be an NFL head coach?
Well, no, nobody does. Nobody is. But if he does, I wouldn't mind starting with Trevor.
It'd be Trevor, and then you have to deal with grown men. I don't feel like Dabo is all in on dealing with grown men.
Well, you don't know. We don't know.
That's what I said. No. I feel. I didn't say I know.
Right. It's not like Nick Saban figured out real quick.
I don't
this isn't
like
good.
This.
You got to play politics. You have guys who now Nick likes to push people around a little bit. Like he's going to coach you hard. That's not always possible with NFL guys. You got to learn who you have to cajole and all. And it's worse now than it was. Now Dabo is more of a love 'em up type guy.
You got to cajole these players today. The college players too now.
I just think the money now is such that the money is now like Cliff Kingsbury. Yeah, of course Cliff Kingsbury would rather go to the pros than be at Texas Tech, for example, not to bash. Because I'm thinking, which coaches could possibly want because the money now in colleges is as good as a pros.
Plus he's living, plus he's in Phoenix. He's not going to Jacksonville,
dude.
Phoenix Phoenix is awesome. I think especially for a young single guy.
Dabo should learn from Nick. Maybe I'll just wait for Nick to retire. If I want a new challenge, just go to Alabama.
Yeah, right. And he's an Alabama guy. Played there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I get it. He's the hot name. I feel like the whole "aw shucks" God, faith, and football thing.
Stop hating, Joe.
I don't know if it would work.
It works
where he is. Try to do that in London, as someone just pointed out. When you're in the London,
then you
Jaguars,
just have to say God, faith, and football. You just have to say faith. Hey, you don't say faith.
Dabo's.
It's called faith and football.
Dabo's hanging out with Christian Pulisic, rooting for Chelsea.
I don't see that.
Well, if he goes to London, he's going to have to pick a football
team. Hey, I like
team.
The way you guys, listen to me. You guys in London are great. You guys do a lot of, you cheer loud, you drink, you go heavy. I hear a lot of swear words, but we're going to be okay with that. But here's the thing. Dental hygiene is important. We got to get this cleaned up right here. But I love the energy. Let's bring it in. And they're like, we don't bring it in. Although, they do have like, act like soccer fans are not the same as college football fans. Act like they're not as maniacal.
Oh, my God, they're worse.
Act like they're not as maniacal.
What, are you crazy?
Yeah. There's also hooligans. What school has the biggest hooligans in college football?
Ohio State.
Oh, yeah.
Ohio State.
LSU's there.
Yeah, LSU's there. I once know a guy.
Oh, Florida.
An LSU fan came and stuck his finger in my booty.
Well, ooh, but what? Ooh. Did he ask for it? We don't know.
It doesn't appear like the man wanted it.
You don't know.
We do know. Actually, we do know because he did multiple videos and go, no, I didn't want it.
He did multiple videos having to say, I didn't ask for that?
In my booty.
The impression clearly was, I didn't ask for the LSU fan to do that to me.
This isn't going to be the thing when I leave every day.
When we don't have
live. I'm playing Michael Jackson's Beat It every day.
When there's no live to do, yes, it will be.
959 ESPN 97.5. Beat it!
You better do what you can. Don't want to see no blood. Don't be a macho man. You want to be tough. Better do what you can. So beat it.